Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be discussing something that I think is so very important. What is that? Entrepreneurship. That is what has helped to make this nation great. And my guest today, Mr. Jim Beach, he, along with Chris Hanks and David Beasley, put together a publication that's called School for Startups. So if you're one of those individuals that has said to yourself, oh, I want to be in business for myself, I really want to do my own thing, we're going to give you some how-tos, but more than that, the reasons why certain processes are so significant if you are wanting to do that one thing that in this country is possible so many times where people cannot do it in another country. Jim Beach, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
Jim, I hope you don't mind me calling you Jim.
Please.
All right. I really found the book extremely insightful. And being an entrepreneur myself, my husband is one. Well, we've got our battle scars that we can proudly show, but many times we say, oh, please, don't even waste your time. If I can tell you something that'll save you some heartache and loss like we've gone through, I'm happy to share it. You have gone a step further, however. You actually have decided, you've done an entrepreneur school. Give us a little bit of this background on this school. How did it get started? Why did you do it?
Well, Chris and I are both longtime entrepreneurs, both for about 10 years, but we're not academics. We have no academic training. We're not the PhD types. We're just practical people who have started some businesses. And as you said, I've got some scars from...
Hi, this is Don. I'm sorry we were having a challenge. Something happened with the telephone line. Jim, let me re-ask the question. Why did you start the school? Because something happened when we had your line and you just disappeared into the ethers. So please repeat what you were saying.
That.
Well, that happens. Yeah. We don't know why.
Yeah. Well, we've been teaching entrepreneurship, starting businesses as well, and realized that there was a large desire for a very, very easy ABCD type approach, everything you would need to know. 72% of the general public secretly says they'd like to be an entrepreneur, but of course only like 10% of America actually acts on that. And so we tried to put together a product and a book that says very simply, you can do this. And we always talk to entrepreneurs or people on the street, and they say that the two things that define entrepreneurship are creativity and taking some sort of risk. And because they haven't had a great idea or because they're afraid of risk, they're not willing to start a business. Well, if I can remove those two things, if I can take creativity out of the mix, and if I can show you how to do it in a way that really involves no risk, then maybe everyone can be the entrepreneur that they want to be.
You know, with this subject, so often people want to glamorize the entrepreneurial positioning. It's really a lot of hard work. There aren't truly any shortcuts. And one of the things about your book called School for Startups, you say most businesses, most entrepreneurs start out on a very, very low income level. They're lucky if they make $15,000 in revenue in their first year. However, you know, that's perhaps an additional $15,000 in their pocket they might be able to use for something else. We've got all kinds of variables. Tell us about Randy Brown. This is a man that right in the beginning of your book was a very resourceful person, and he worked for a corporation. Let us tell his story, why he was so significant to you and why you have him in your book.
Well, Randy is a high school dropout, started working at a downtown law firm, you know, one of those 500 lawyer type law firms, when he was 16 as a courier. And over the next 20 years, worked his way up to where he was the purchasing manager for the law firm, did everything, you know, taking care of the couriers and the transcriptionists, buying computers, all of that. But he was still only making like $36,000. Eventually, he got his high school diploma and got some college training as well. And he became a friend of mine, and we started working together and realized that he could take his core concept, which is doing everything that a law firm needs except the legal stuff, and do that for many, many law firms and outsource it for them. It would provide a cheaper service for the law firm, better service, and make him a significant income. So, of course, he quit. The first company that hired him was his old employer. They were saving money. And now he has about 20 big corporate clients and is doing fantastically well. You know, has expanded into other services and is also doing this type of servicing for other companies as well outside of the legal profession. So it's a beautiful example where he, you know, took some sort of risk. Unfortunately, Randy did have a little bit of risk, but he knew, and this is the beautiful thing, he made that transition with the first big client already in his pocket, which is his former employer, which is a scenario that when you study entrepreneurship, you'll see again and again, the first big contract coming from an ex-employer. So it's always something to think about.
You make your comments in your book, very few entrepreneurs are couch potatoes. I agree with that. Growth always will come slowly, regardless of maybe the one in a billion that, woohoo, I made it overnight. That really doesn't happen. Most of the time, you have to build a respect. You have to build an association with businesses and services that you're going to be either offering or will be helping people to do a better job with. And a point was made that when you're wanting to acquire new clients, you should spend the first hour of every business day on client acquisition, sales, or marketing. And I thought that was very, very significant. Now, one of the cases that you give regarding entrepreneurship that I thought was just absolutely amazing is that a classroom be used and students in this classroom become the entrepreneurial laboratory. Tell us how you put this concept together, when it was done, and what the results were.
Well, it actually started out of pure arrogance. I was in class one day saying, you know, entrepreneurship can be a methodical process, and you don't have to incur the risk, and we can do this easily. And they were like, okay, do it. I was like, sure, I could do it. And I ended up backing myself into a bet with the class. I bet the class, and this was a group of graduate students getting their MBA, that we could start a business that semester, and the business would be 100% profitable, having repaid all of its initial investment and cash flow positive, and that the class would get to decide the country and the industry that we would start the business in. And so it was right after 9/11 the first time we did this. And they thought, you know, this will be funny. Let's choose Pakistan because of the obvious political implications. That would be a hard place to start a business. And then they also chose furniture because the week before I had done a big long thing on how furniture is a horrible 2% margin industry and it's the last industry I'd ever want to be in. So as a joke, they thought I should do a Pakistani furniture company. And we did. We put together a product. We methodically worked through it. You know, we had a very, you know, orderly process. We started off with a well-defined brainstorm. Our brainstorm needed to include only things that could be done in Pakistan and involving furniture. And so all the other ideas were not good ideas. And we came out after a well-functioning, well-planned-out brainstorm of having three or four ideas. We then chose the best one and started to implement it. The beauty of it was that it was as low risk as possible. And so we were able to get the assistance of the U.S. Commercial Service. They have a program called the Gold Key Service. For $750, they will introduce you to companies locally, and in this case, inside of Pakistan, that were interested in helping me with my furniture business. So we contacted some of these businesses and found a company that was willing to make for us a product that no one else had seen. I think we've, you know, probably seen something similar to this in America, where we take an old Persian carpet or a pack of Quilim rug, something like that, you know, an Oriental rug, and cut it up and use it as the fabric for either ottomans. Sometimes you've seen it as large suitcases. But in this case, we were going to make, you know, six-piece matching dining room set furniture out of it, or a big Queen Anne, George Washington-type armchair that you would find in a ski lodge next to a dry stacked stone fireplace in Aspen or something. And in fact, that's where we ended up selling the product. So we were able to find the company. They shepherd us through, you know, two or three different iterations, and then they would literally UPS them overnight so that we could bring them into class and look at it and, you know, talk about the product. The next week we would talk about the marketing and how we could go ahead and get some pre-sales. And in this case, the factory in Pakistan was able to take very nice pictures for us. We made those into 5x8 cards, which we mailed to every interior decorator in the United States, and said, there's only 28 of these coming. You better get one of them fast. And we sold 25 of them before the container left Pakistan. So again,
wow.
Beautiful things. No risk. You know, the risk was very, very minimal. And that company was a beautiful success. We ended up doing that 12 times in a row in the academic setting in classrooms, all with small little projects like that. Some were very successful, some were not so successful.
How many students were in this class that you worked together with as a team?
Well, it was a small MBA class, so 15, 18 students, something like that on average.
Well, that's a good number.
It is a fairly large MBA class, but it was, you know, they were all 28 to 32 years old, something like that. They had already accomplished some things and were good students.
Now, you say starting a billion-dollar company seems totally impossible, but supplementing your income with an extra $25,000 of income is doable by anybody. Let's talk about the myths of entrepreneurship. Now, one of the myths that is perpetuated so frequently, economy stinks, this is a lousy time to start a business. It actually is the best time to start a business. Why?
Well, if you can sell something now, you can sell it anytime. If you can sell it in a great economy like 2006 or 2007, you're probably bankrupt today during a tough economy. So you want to get your market testing, your testing of your pitch, all of those things down right now. And if you can go out there and be lean, also today's economy will force you not to hire anyone you don't need. It's going to force you to have very strict inventory control. Everything about a lean economy forces you to be lean. It forces you to worry about cash flow and to think about your burn rate, forces you to be conservative. All of the things that a small business should be. But number one, I like the idea that if I can sell it now, I can sell it in any market.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. A point that so frequently is stated by anyone who has been an entrepreneur is if you're going to go into business, make sure you like it. Now, some people might argue with that, but I really feel that that is extremely important, and you agree with that. Why?
Well, if I'm going to do something, you know, if I have a job that's 40 hours a day, your entrepreneurial life is going to make you work an additional 30 or 40 hours a day. You better like what you're doing so that, you know, it doesn't kill you to spend Saturday night shipping boxes out or preparing a PowerPoint for a presentation on Monday. You know, it's doubling down on life and spending your leisure time working as opposed to watching The Real Housewives of somewhere. And so it forces you to, you know, really evaluate how you're going to spend your time. I had a hard time this summer when my children were at home and not in school. They wanted to spend time with me, and I had to choose. And I'm not going to make that difficult choice of sacrificing family time, sacrificing my life, unless it's something I care a lot about. And it's easiest to care about something that you know is solving a problem for somebody. And in the businesses that I've had that have been successful, when I'm solving problems for people, it makes it an easy thing to do. And frequently entrepreneurs will say that. I know I'm doing good because I'm solving somebody's problem. And that makes it, you know, a little bit easier. However, I don't want Donna people to wait around and wait for an idea that, you know, allows them to really fulfill their life's passion. And my life's passion is being a woodworker. But I've realized that I'm not going to make a living being a woodworker. So I do that on the side. And I don't want people to wait saying, I'm going to do my life passion, and that's what they're saying. We're saying, no, go do something that you enjoy now, but get started. You know, don't wait for the creativity to hold you back. So go out there and find on Google a list of hot new business ideas, or look at doing something cool that you can emulate or that you can also do. And get going now. Get going with some sort of business creation. Again, as you said, even if it's only $15,000, because it's got to do something. Even if it's not something you absolutely love, do something that you can enjoy to like.
You have a gentleman by the name of Ben, and I wanted to bring his story up because this was innovative thinking, but he did not come up with the original idea. And it was a pressure blanket for cows to calm them when they were being vaccinated or slaughtered. And this man really was amazing at what he was able to do. And this there was a woman who had developed this. Tell us his story.
Right. Well, it was a veterinary product developed by a female vet to help cows, as you said, in these unpleasant situations. And Ben saw a need, and it was, in his case, a family need. His dog freaks out during thunderstorms. And so he decided that maybe this product, which works with cows, would also have the same effect with dogs. And to date, in the last year and a half since he introduced it, he sold about $1.2 million worth of these dog calming blankets, and people swear by them. You know, they really think that their dog is happier, and the dog seems to enjoy the blanket. Again, it's finding a need that satisfies, perhaps, you know, it might be just a personal need. In this case, he saw a need that would make his family life better by having a calmer dog. And he developed a product that in his life worked. And it also turned out that there were $1.2 million of market so far for other people who liked this product. So, and he did that on the side as well. That was not what he was doing full time. He started that as a side venture, and it exploded for him. But again, he didn't take that much risk because he didn't expose his family to a double mortgage, and he didn't borrow $200,000 against his house or anything like that. He started small with a very small order and then grew over time organically so that the risk was small and the creativity was non-existent. It was someone else's idea. He had the wherewithal to do it himself. So, again, I want to encourage people to not get caught up on creativity and risk. Let's find ways to, you know, get creativity another way and to reduce risk so that, you know, you can still do this and not risk your kids' college education.
You bring out a factor of a discipline that I think is absolutely imperative, and that is brainstorming. I really like brainstorming with people, and I think sometimes we can get the wildest and wackiest bits and points of information if you use a whiteboard and you just write everything down and don't judge it. But you made a point about brainstorming. You said when you do it, you should only take on one issue at a time. tell us why that's significant, and what are your rules for brainstorming?
Well, I do like recording everything on a whiteboard. I think that is very important. But you do have to put some boundary on it to begin with. And I think that a good brainstorming starts with a more precise question than what people are usually accustomed to. So instead of brainstorming for, let's come up with the new market trend, something very obscure like that, you should brainstorm what two products that I'm currently selling could be sexier if I did something to them. So that's a very, very finite question. And then instead of having an open-ended brainstorm, your company or your team or you and your friends or your entrepreneur buddies and, you know, the people that you go to have a beer with once a week, you can sit down and have a limited discussion on a very particular topic, how to develop two new business lines that are going to increase my bottom line today, you know, how to generate a cheap marketing plan that would create social buzz within my community. Brainstorm just on that one thing, and you can come up with a whole package of solutions that will solve particular problems. So instead of brainstorming big things, brainstorm really small things too.
Very good point. You say not to be afraid of dealing with a small player. You say currently less than 1% of 30 million companies in the United States export products. Now, we all know today that one of the biggest problems in the United States is that, one, our manufacturing has dwindled down to next to nothing, and we are offering less and less on an international basis to countries around the world that they can purchase from us. We are decreasing in our economic base, and for someone to take their product or their services and sell it around the world when there's only 1% currently of the companies in the United States that are exporting, that is amazing. There is an international market that is just phenomenal. Why do you think that that's the case? Why is it that companies are not exporting?
I think it's just because they're afraid. They don't know who to make that first telephone call to. Almost all import-export activity happens serendipitously. A company's first international transaction usually happens randomly. They get a call from Japan, and they have no idea how that person found them. And they muddle through the transaction, and eventually, succeed, and slowly over the time that, you know, may become a significant part of their business. But until someone is given that impetus to act, most people are simply afraid, and they have the same fears that, you know, drive a lot of people to not start a business in the first place. They don't know who to call. They don't know the financial situation. They're afraid that there's going to somehow be a greater risk. And in fact, one of the things that we find that's particularly appealing about international business is that, again, it can reduce risk. So if I'm exporting a product to overseas or importing it, I get a letter from my bank that says as soon as I ship or do whatever I'm legally responsible for, I am going to get paid. And you know what? My bank sends me that letter saying that. That's a pretty nice guarantee to have that you don't get when you deal with, say, Iowa or Indiana or Vermont. So sometimes, you know, these letters of credit that allow international business to happen can reduce your risk. A lot of companies will also give you credit and provide some sort of loan for you to purchase items based on the collateral of the goods themselves. I know UPS offers a service like that. So there's a lot of things about international business that seem difficult, but in fact make it a great way to start. You don't need to be afraid to start your very first business as an international one. Find a product. Go overseas on vacation. Find something that's cool there that you like, and bring it back here and find out how to, you know, get it here. It's not that hard. It can be done.
And that, again, if people are able to generate income in the United States, for example, if they have a product or service and are able to have an international business development, that's going to bring money back into the United States. It's not
exactly
going to be the exporting of dollars and jobs. We're actually going to then be able to add to our bottom line as a nation, which I think is something that should be considered very, very exciting. And historically, it is the entrepreneurs that do that, not a government, but the
right
entrepreneurs,
we're the
themselves.
Right. We're the people that create jobs. So anything that the government can do to make the entrepreneur's life easier or to promote entrepreneurship in the first place, a government should do. So it's sad right now, the state of entrepreneurship here in the United States. It's just a hard time to do it. But that means something really cool for those people brave enough is that there are opportunities out there. There are situations, there are needs out there that need to be fulfilled. And while other people are sitting on the sidelines, again, now is the time to go and do it because other people are too afraid.
One of the things that I wanted to bring up is that you say you preferred, or you and your students found, that you preferred spending the money and time on long-term SEO strategies and PageRank. Tell us what SEO is, why is that important, and how do you use that strategy effectively?
Well, SEO is search engine optimization. It's the ability of one website to come up before others on Google. So everyone knows that the higher you are on page one of Google, the better off you will do. We always joke that there's a special term for any company or any entrepreneur that comes up number one on Google. That's called a millionaire. And the idea that you can manipulate that is something that's developed into a whole industry now. There's a whole, you know, there's hundreds and thousands of companies in the United States that do this search engine optimization as a full-time profession. As an entrepreneur, there are things that you need to know about what you can do for very, very inexpensive, cheap amounts of money that can also drive your Google presence. And we have a big part of the book and a big part of the teaching that we do is about how to manipulate that. One of the easiest things to do is to blog every day. You should have a blog that, you know, it attracts people to your website. And the biggest mistake people make with the blog is that they tell me what their business is. They care who you've hired or about your new office space. I want to be educated about your, you know, whatever you're an expert in when I look at your blog. So people need to have higher values of content, and that content is what drives the search engine, you know, effectiveness. There's lots of other things that you can do technically, and we make sure that the entrepreneur understands those terms so that they don't overpay for a lot of these services. These services should be pretty cheap. You should be able to get a good SEO package for under $100 a month. I see lots of people paying $5,000 a month simply because they don't know the right terminology, the right questions to ask, and sometimes how easy what they're asking is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we also all, you know, everyone needs to have the Facebook page and the Twitter now. And I don't, you know, personally, I don't like some of those things. I think that the Twitter things, some of those comments are rather silly. But I know that as an entrepreneur, I have to be doing that for my business because I may have a customer that does like that venue.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Also,
now,
those things are very cheap.
Yes, they are. I know we're just about out of time, and I wanted to just say that your book has so much explicit information. You have a section on hiring employees. You talk about having an advisory board, which I think is very important. You go into franchising, which is sometimes very good for certain types of individuals. What to be on alert for if you want to buy a business. Entrepreneurship is your passion, and you and your associates, Chris Hanks and David Beasley, have put together, I think, a very powerful, comprehensive book School for Startups, the breakthrough course for guaranteeing small business success in 90 days or less, which to me is just incredible, just to even think of that. But your stories inside really demonstrate how that can be done. What is your website, Jim, that people can go to find out more about this wonderful school that you have for entrepreneurship in case they'd like to sign up?
Well, thank you. It's School for Startups is the book. We also have a website called theentrepreneurschool.com, which is, you know, video education, 100 hours of educational material designed for the entrepreneur student. The cool thing about the book is if you buy the book, you get a month free on the online center as well. So go ahead and buy the book, and it comes with a coupon for a free month. And then I also run a website called internationalentrepreneurship.com, which is anything you would want to know about 105 different countries around the world. If you're interested in starting a business in China, go to that website. It will tell you how to get started and the things you need to know about doing business in China, importing and exporting, like we were talking about. So, and that's a totally free website as well.
Well, Jim, this has been a delight. I think the accomplishment that you and your associates have been able to achieve is marvelous. And this is the time for people to know that they do have a resource they can go to and one that can be utilized with far-reaching benefits. Jim Beach has been my guest. Again, his book is School for Startups. The websites, there are two that you can go to. The first one is theentrepreneurschool.com, and if you buy the book, you get a free coupon, and you're able to have a free month inside this wonderful environment. And if you're interested in finding out more about international working relationships, go to internationalentrepreneurship.com. It is an abundance of information that I think will just absolutely excite you. So don't give up on your dream. Jim Beach, thank you very much for being with me today. It's been absolutely a joy having you as a guest, and I wish you nothing but success.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. More good things to come.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And I want to let you know, if you would like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, the telephone number to call in to is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. For those of you in Western Washington, I want to remind you this coming weekend is the last weekend of the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. I'm going to be there in costume along with hundreds and actually thousands of other people. But look for my booth. It's got the bright yellow banners with the gigantic red lions on it. And I'm doing many readings for people, and I'll have a plethora of books available as well. And I want you to know this is a family event. It is absolutely incredible. We have all kinds of performers that are going to be coming in this weekend. It's just awesome. And the costumes, my goodness, the creativity of people is incredible. So check out their website. Go to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, and there you will find all of the information about the location in Bonnie Lake at the Kelly Farm. You'll get directions. You'll find out about ticket discounts. Don't miss it. This is just one of the biggest events in the state of Washington, and it is something well worth doing. So pack up the kids, neighbors, aunties, uncles, whatever you've got, bring them along, because it will be an experience that they'll be talking about for a long, long time. The Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like for me to give you an intuitive reading over the air. 888-627-6008. Tomorrow, I'm going to have on one of my favorite people, Tom Sawyer. Tom Sawyer is a well-known writer for television, and he was one of the primary writers for the fabulous program Murder, She Wrote. Angela Lansbury was the lead in that, and she is just a wonderful, wonderful actress, wonderful person. And Tom, gee, he's got so many wonderful stories to tell. But more than that, we're going to be talking about his book, The 16th Man. It is a mind twister, a murder mystery that you will really enjoy. So we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. So I hope that you'll be able to tell your friends and tune in. And by the way, if you're a new listener to the show and you're wondering, how do I find out about these guests that come up on Donna Sebo's show? Well, all you have to do, when you go in to listen to the show, look for the icon that says Show Information for the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll have a listing that you can review, and you can see information about all of the guests coming up. So it's an easy way to keep in touch. Now, I want to say, if you like salmon, I'm going to share with you a wonderful recipe that someone passed along to me, and it's salmon with black bean salsa. So have a pad of paper and a pen handy so that we can give you that, or I will be sharing that recipe with you. It's a great recipe for a summer meal. If you're like me during summer, lighter fare is something that you really enjoy, and you want to make sure that you are able to just not feel burdened with heavier foods. Winter, there's sort of those more intense meals. But during the summer, you want to keep it light, and there's so much to do, and you just want to enjoy every beautiful day that you have. Are you familiar with Clark Howard? Clark Howard is a man that I can remember hearing in Seattle area. Oh, my goodness, it has to have been at least 10 years ago. And I always enjoyed his show. Clark Howard is based in Washington, D.C., and he is a man who is always looking for a bargain. He is always trying to find the most effective and efficient way to utilize money, and he is known for his frugality. Now, this is a man who walks his walk. He just doesn't talk the talk. He is a person that really feels that it's important that the consumer be educated. And there were a lot of things that he would talk about many years ago that I really found very useful, and then the show disappeared off the airwaves here locally, and so I haven't been able to hear it, but I always have a deep appreciation for him. Now, he's based in Atlanta. He does have stuff coming out of D.C., but he really is so interesting because he said he is exactly what he portrays on his show. And he has a wonderful, wonderful book, and I'm hoping to get him on the show. It's called Clark Howard's Living Large in Lean Times. And he says people really need to pay attention to looking for bargains. And he said you need to put your mindset to being able to get the best value for the dollars that you are spending. And he said, you need to be willing to do some research. And he said, once you've done your homework and you've compared prices, you need to know and feel good about the fact that you are buying something that's worth putting your money into. And don't worry about it if you can get it 3% cheaper somewhere else or even 10% cheaper. Think of the larger amount that you have saved. So it's being not penny wise and pound foolish. I guess that would be a proper statement to make. And then also, he said, for those individuals that are looking for automobiles, boy, buying a car is really an intense project. And he said, if you use various car programs, you investigate them, you probably are going to be able to get a better price than if you just walked into a showroom store. And he said, most of the people buying automobiles today don't know how to shop. They don't know how to look for the best value. And he said that is something you really need to do. And he advocates very strongly extinguishing debt, which I think any of us would be very much in favor of. He said if you're paying an average credit card interest rate of 12% and you wipe that out, you are finished with that 12% debt. Now, if you've got small debts, well, then he said, don't worry about it too much. Build your financial portfolio. Look at where you can put your money where it's going to work better and more effectively for you. And one thing that someone asked him that was quite interesting, they asked him, what is the biggest obstacle to saving for the American consumer? And he said, it's not saving as the first thing that they do with their check. He said, the key is to develop the habit to save before you get your check. He said, the mentality of modern banking is all about getting credit cards into the hands of kids, debit cards, and he said, that's not saving. It's important that we understand that maybe we have to save, or like I can remember I used to do, I acquired so many things, wardrobe, furniture, you name it, by layaway. I used to be teased by friends. They'd say I was the layaway queen of the Pacific Northwest. But it was a way you didn't have to worry about interest. You didn't have to do anything like that. Well, a lot of the companies that used to have layaway at their stores, they don't do it anymore. But it's beginning to have a comeback. What you need to evaluate is if you're going to be able to meet their terms. Because some of the layaway programs that may be available with a certain business, they may only allow you to have a layaway for 8 weeks. And then if you don't pay everything at that 8-week period, they are going to put it all back on the showroom floor or into their inventory list again, and you'll lose the money that you've paid them and also the product that you've wanted to have. So layaway, be sure you check it out if that's something that works for you. If you have a regular paycheck and you know how much you can put down, that is a way to save money. But sometimes the other option is just to put the money in the piggy bank on the side because cash talks. And sometimes you have a negotiating position that you otherwise might not be able to enjoy. So cash does talk. And a little bit saved can save you perhaps more dollars than what you realize. This is Donna Sebo. When we come back, I'm going to give you a recipe for salmon with black bean salsa. So don't go away. I'll be sharing that with you in just a moment. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Okay, I've got the recipe for salmon with black bean salsa. Now, this is so easy. It's awesome. These are the ingredients. It's wonderful for a hot summer day, little effort. You're not going to have to heat up the kitchen too much. It's just marvelous. Okay, and by the way, you could do this on the broiler, or you can fix this on the grill. Now, here are the ingredients. 2 teaspoons of soy sauce, 2 teaspoons of soy sauce, 1 tablespoon of orange juice, 1 tablespoon of orange juice, 1 pound of a thick salmon fillet. Now, you want to take the skin off of the salmon, and you want to cut it into 4 pieces, 4 serving pieces, and you're going to take that salmon, and you're going to put it in a plastic bag. A gallon bag would be just great. Take your soy sauce, your orange juice, mix that up, take it about 5 seconds to whisk that, and put it right in there with the salmon. And you want to put it into the refrigerator, let it marinate for a minimum of 20 minutes, and if you want, just put it in the fridge for up to 2 hours if you're going to be busy with different things. Now, here's your salsa. This is how simple this is. You're going to need 15 ounces of black beans. You want to drain them out of the can and rinse them. You need 1 soft mango, and you want to dice that meat of the mango. 1/2 teaspoon of ground cumin, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cumin. 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil, 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil. 1/2 cup of chopped cilantro, 1/2 cup of chopped cilantro. 2 fresh limes. Now, you want to juice these limes. So 2 fresh limes. Oh, and to get extra, make sure you get as much juice out of it as possible, put it in the microwave. Let the 2 limes stay in the microwave. Put it on high heat for about 10, 15 seconds. That'll get even more juice out of that lime when you go and you extract it. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of red onion minced very finely. You're going to need 1/8 teaspoon of sea salt, and 1/8 teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper. Now, all you need to do is take all of the ingredients, the beans, the mango, the cumin, the olive oil, the cilantro, the limes, the onion, the salt, and the pepper, mix them all in a large bowl, and you want to cover it. And then you want to put it, I'd recommend putting it into a glass bowl, and cover it, and then put it in the refrigerator. Fix that first thing before, you know, in the day. And then that way, all of these delicious flavors are going to marry. They're just going to be absolutely wonderful. Now, when it comes time for dinner, all you have to do is either turn on the broiler or preheat your grill. You put your salmon on, grill or broil until the salmon is nicely browned, and then 1/2 cup of the salsa on the plate, and then put your salmon piece on top of that and garnish it with some fresh cilantro sprigs. And boy, have you got a beautiful plate full of food, light, deliciously flavorful, and easy to fix. Absolutely wonderful. And you know, if you were going to be going to a potluck, that black bean salsa, you could double or triple the recipe take it along. People are going to really enjoy it because this actually, I think, goes very, very well with chicken, not just fish, but chicken, maybe turkey. I don't know how it would taste with meat, but I think whatever you want to do, but it's got its own unique flavor, Spanish style. So I just think that is a good recipe, and I'm very glad to share that with you. A couple of trivial items here that I wanted to share with. If you're a fan of mushrooms, we in the Sebo household enjoy mushrooms a great deal. Well, Ty Whitmore in Kansas City, Montana, discovered a mushroom that was 56 pounds. Can you imagine a mushroom weighing that much? He was cutting firewood. He found it, and he wanted to be sure that he could verify this fungus, which is exactly what mushrooms are, and he went through creeks. He protected this from everything until he was able to reach a grocery store where a staff allowed him to measure it on their scales. And this mushroom, which is amazingly huge, 56 pounds, it was 36 inches across. And he found it when he was out cutting firewood. You never know what you're going to find. Oh, and I have to share with you something else. Have you ever heard of cockroach celebrities? Yes, well, I told you, you think you know everything, and by golly, you find out you don't. Well, there is a gentleman by the name of Michael Bodan. He doesn't like bugs, but because he doesn't like them, he decided that he was going to, exploit them in a unique way. He said he's killed thousands of them because he's in the extermination business. However, he has made a permanent feature out of the best catches of bugs that he's had through his years of doing the extermination thing. He's got what he calls the Cockroach Hall of Fame. I know you think you hear everything, but you don't. He decided that he was going to find the largest cockroach in Dallas. This is how it all started out. It was a stunt, and he thought, my goodness, what am I going to do with all of these supersized dead cockroaches? Well, I know what I'd do with them. They'd go into the garbage disposal or the recycle bin or something. He said he decided he wasn't going to throw him out. Instead, what he did, he started dressing up these dead cockroaches, and these things are big, and the Cockroach Hall of Fame Museum was born. Now, in Plano, Texas, every year, thousands of people, so curious about this, visit this museum to see heroes in the half shell. That's right. That's how they're described. Heroes in the half shell as H. Ross Perotch, David Letter Roach, Marilyn Monroe, and seated at a tiny piano and wearing a cape, a white cape, is the inimitable Liberace. And I got a picture of him in front of me. Well, you wouldn't believe it. But this cockroach even has sequins. Yuck. Okay. Well, you know, it takes all kinds of people to make this world an interesting one. And believe me, he's a doozy. This is Donna Sebo. And quickly, I want to share with you, if you want to find out how to deal with certain people and you know their sun signs, or you have a chance to find it out. And I've shared with you Aries, Taurus, and Gemini. Let's go with Leo. I think that's all we're going to have time for today. If you want to really know how to work with people, understanding their sun signs sometimes can really help. Those born under the sign of Leo, well, they like appreciation. Actually, they enjoy being adored, but what you want to do is compliment them. But make sure that they're real, because the last thing that a Leo likes is when you're phony. So you want to be sure that you are very sincere about what you say, and be aware that many Leos are workaholics, and this person expects their dues. That's right. The Leo sign is a very aristocratic one. And if you want to really work well with someone like this, remember the Leos will take care of you as long as you take care of them. In fact, Leos like to reward people that assist them in accomplishing what they like to do. Well, my goodness, we've run out of time. I want to thank you for being with me today. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. It's always delightful to share time with you. Tell your friends about the program. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the mystery writer Tom Sawyer and finding out about the 16th man. Yes. Hope you can join me. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day. Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interview?